Rabbi Schechter says that any time that you're covering a topic, the most important question to ask if you encounter a din is whether it's a din d'oraisa, whether it's a din d'rabbanan. So I guess we should ask the question about the Shlosh Esrei Midos. Are they dinim d'oraisa or dinim d'rabbanan? If they are dinim d'oraisa, so what's the origin? Are they gzeiras hakasovs? Are they halacha l'moshe misinais? And perhaps a starting point, I tend to diverge from the outline, is on the second side. You'll see that there's a Karban Aharon, and he quotes the Ravid, the Ravid's commentary on Torah's Kohanim, where the Ravid actually differentiates, and he says that some of the Midos are learned out from Xeris HaKasos, and some of them are learned out from other sources. He points out that the two Midos that are learned from Xeris HaKasos are Kal v'chomer and Shnei Ksuvim Hamachishim Ze'ezeh. The Ravid's understanding of these Xeris HaKasos are that we see that the Torah makes Kal v'chomer itself. Avia Yarok Yarak Mefaneh Halosi Kalim Shivas Yamim and Shnei Ksuvim Hamachishim Ze'ezeh. In one place the Pasuk says that Vayered Kvod Hashem Al Har Sinai, and in another place it says God spoke from heaven, and so in the Torah elsewhere, third place, makes the hachra that he came down up until 10 tefachim, from which we learn now that 10 tefachim is the shiur of all the reshuyos shel karka, and above 10 tefachim is different. And so the Ravid says that once the Torah did that, it gives us permission to imitate it. And so the source of Kal v'chomer is all the Torah did it, God did that, and so we can do it too, we're imitating God. The source of Shnei Ksuvim HaMachrishim Ze'ezeh, Ashi Yavo HaKasav HaShlishi, is that God was Machriya between two psukim, which are Machrishim Ze'ezeh, and so we can also be Machriya between two psukim, which are Machrishim Ze'ezeh. So that's not Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, that seems to be based on the psukim themselves and our imitation of the psukim, as opposed to the other 11 of the 13 midos. The Ravid leaves it open for those 11 to be derived from other places, whether that's Halacha L'Moshe Misinai or whether that's Dirabanon, we'll have to discover in just a moment. But it is important because many commentaries tend to treat the 13 midos as a single group. Either you classify them all one way, you classify them all another way. And so in addition to his actual position on the issue, is it the Arais or is it the Rabbanon, the Ravid is also important because he gives us a doorway into differentiating between the different Midos. So let's just see. All the Midos according to other Rishonim, some of the Midos according to the Ravid, what's the origin? The second thing we have to consider is the position of the Rambam. The Rambam writes in Sharashim of Sefer HaMitzvos that he seems to write that the Midos are the Rabbanon. The formulation is a very complicated formulation. Maybe we'll read the beginning of it right now, but I prefer to save the remainder of it perhaps for its own chabur, just to read it. The Rambam writes, "Ein ra'oi limnos kol mashal lemedin ba'achas midos shartan adreshes ben oberiboy." Doesn't belong in a list of 630 mitzvos. Ein ra'oi limnos, so you shouldn't count them. He adds on riboy is somehow not on the list. And he tells us, "Kol mashalotim sa'eyu kasuv b'Torah, b'tim sa'eyu b'Talmud." Anything which is not written in the Torah, you'll find it in the Gemara. Shalamdu ba'achas mishloshes midos. In be'aruhim ba'atzma, if Chazal themselves explained. The Amru Shezeh Guf Torah, they called it a Guf Torah, O Shezeh Oraisa, this is the Oraisa, Hinei Ra'ui Lemnoso, so then it's suitable to count. The Guf Torah, in many we showed him, use as synonymous with Pshuto Shal Mikra. We'll probably see that a couple more times over the course of the year. And then he says, Im Lo Yivaru Zeh, Velo Dibrubo, if Chazal did not explain that it's a Guf Torah, they didn't speak about it and call it a Oraisa, Hinei Hu Dirabanan. So it's only the Rabbanon. So if it's learned that from the 13 Midos, and Chazal did not call it a Guf Torah, and did not call it the Oraisa, then Hinei Hu the Rabbanon. So at least in one place, the Rambam seems to say explicitly that the many things that are derived from the Shlosh Esrei Midos are only the Rabbanon. And then he explains, She'in kam sham kasuv yore alav, there is no pasuk that teaches about it. So the question is, how are we supposed to understand this this Rambam? Hinei Hu Dirabanan. there is a range of ways to understand this Rambam, starting from the most literal and arranging to more and more figurative. The most literal interpretation of the Rambam is that he means what he says, that it's only the Rabbanim, Kasha, that the Ramban already asks that we treat many things that are derived from the Shlosh Esrei Midos as Dioraisas. We'll get to that in a second, but what would it mean that it's the Rabbanim? So we have, I forgot which Sefer Rabbi Eliyahu Alfandari wrote, he's not some obscure Rishon, he wrote a famous Sefer that we should be familiar with, I just don't remember what Sefer it was. And he argues as follows. He says that if Chazal tell us that it's a Guf Torah, or if they tell us it's a Dioraisa, it means that we have a tradition going all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at Har Sinai, that this is Dioraisa. What's the role of the Drasha, if you have Halach LaMoshe MiSinai about it? It's also a question that we'll have to resolve in the course of the discussion. The Rambam says that it's to show you the Chachmas HaTorah, that the Torah was written so carefully that it hints at all sorts of things that are just Halach LaMoshe MiSinai. The fact that it has those allusions, almost like a subtle poem, is something which increases its chashivos, but not necessarily that the allusions are the derivations. They're simply hints and allusions with an A. So Rabbi Eliyahu Alfandari says that what we remember is from Har Sinai, and anything that we don't remember going back to Har Sinai, well, it's a safik. Did God tell that to Moshe at Har Sinai? Did Moshe tell it to Yeshua? We don't remember. Maybe he didn't. Maybe nothing was said. Maybe our memory is playing a trick on us. So maybe it is Dioraisa. Maybe it is something that we're obligated to do, and maybe it's not. Well, safik Dioraisa is Chumrah is what we pass in the Rambam, in whose sheet that we're operating, happens to hold the Safik Dioraisa as Lekula Midioraisa, and it's only Lechumrah Midirabbanon. So that would lead you to the conclusion that anything that we do not remember as being biblical in origin is only obligatory Midirabbanon, because the Chachamim came along and said that if we're not sure, that if there's a chance that it's a Dioraisa, we have to be Machmir on it. So it's Dirabbanon. So that's one opinion. It takes the Rambam very, very literally. It's Dirabbanon. But perhaps because it is derabbanan bevechinas safik deoraisa, we're going to be more machmir about it. You know, it's not a takana derabbanan, it's not a gzeira derabbanan. Takanos are sort of like mitzvahs aseh derabbanans, and gzeiros are like mitzvahs los aseh derabbanans. And this is not either of them. This is where the Torah says there's a chance that the Torah said they were supposed to do. They just don't remember. The Chachamim said, even though ordinarily misafik we wouldn't have to do it, but they're saying that misafik we should do it. So that gives it more Dioraisa power. I thought along similar lines that you might say that there's a big discussion about Yish Koach B'yad Chachamim Lak or Davar Min HaTorah B'Shev Al Tasa, that's an explicit Gemara. B'Kum Vasei, so there's a controversial line in Tosfos where Tosfos say Nivamo Staf Peites Tzadi, that when it's a Davar Hadome, they have the power to be Uker Davar Min HaTorah B'Kum Vasei. So I thought maybe it's possible that the drashos were part of what makes something into a davar hadome. And so you could argue that this is the utilization of the koach. The koach of Chachamim to do this is already explicit in the Torah, perhaps. And because it's a davar hadome, that gives it closer to the Dioraisa status, which is why we treat the drashos as being more Dioraisa. Again, I think we'll have to come back and clarify more precisely why it is that if it's all Drabbanon that we give it the dinim of the Dioraisas, but for now, at least there are two ways to understand the Rambam very, very literally. Now, the opposite extreme is to understand the Rambam entirely figuratively. We'll get that in a second, but there's a middle extreme as well, a middle ground, which is to say that that the Rambam was talking partially literally, but he's not talking about Dioraisa versus Drabbanon in the classical sense, but rather he's talking about Dioraisa means something that can be counted on a list of 613 midos, and Midrabbanon means something that cannot be counted on the list of 613 midos. The language of the Rambam, in other than that, Hinehu Dirabbanon, in other places, does seem to support this. He says, Ein Ra'ui Limnos. He's starting off by defining what is suitable to be counted on the list of 613 and what's not suitable to be counted on the list of 613. So it's possible that when he says Dirabbanon, that should be understood non-literally. It's Lav Dafka. And really, what he just means to to say is that it's not the araisa in the utmost sense. The utmost the araisa belongs on the list of 613 mitzvos, and this is the rabbanon in the sense that it can't be counted on that list. Now, if you're understanding the Rambam figuratively, so the question will become, what difference does it make? We always like the svarim that we're reading to have nafkaminas ledina, not just in terms of understanding Jewish history, perhaps not even in terms of understanding hashkafa. And so the question that can be asked, what difference does it make whether it's on the list of 613 mitzvos or not? It's a question that always troubled me in connection with all of the Emunei HaMitzvos. Why are they spending so much effort classifying, is this a mitzvah, is this not a mitzvah? Like, we have to do it. We don't have to do it, so then we don't have to do it. And why spend all of this effort listing the 613? So it's possible, and I think I'm coming more to terms with the possibility now, that it's not necessarily something that has a nafgamina ledina, but it has a nafgamina in terms of formulating or forming our worldview. To get an understanding of the values of Judaism. So it's important to understand that there are some values that are more central, there are other values that are more peripheral, there are some values that are headings, and there are some values that are only subheadings. And part of the avoda of a person in this world is to really have a value structure or a constellation of values, as Rabbi Rosenzweig calls it, that is as accurate and as true to God's constellation of values as possible. And to create that sort of theoretical universe is something which is inherently worthwhile, even if there is no concrete nafgamina. So.
Seems that due to a wedding today, it may not have been the best day.
Yeah, but I postponed it already so many times.
Right.
I was very reluctant to postpone it again.
I missed the earlier mention, sorry.
So we should have somebody else joining us as well in just a moment. We're up to 1 TI. So I'm sort of coming to terms with the possibility that there are many, many important things in Torah which don't actually have a nafkamina ledina, but which nonetheless are critical for a Jew flourishing and blossoming and becoming everyone whom he can be. So the list might represent central value categories. I actually came to this realization over the course of the past year when I've been giving a shiur on Sefer HaMitzvos. And the reason I chose Sefer HaMitzvos, without having thought about this particular kasha, was because, there are robes and there are chazakas and there are all sorts of interesting side things that are very interesting in Torah. But I figure that at least people should know the Tariag Mitzvos. Those sort of define what the central values are, and robes and chazakas are ways of answering particular questions about how to conduct ourselves, but the central values of Judaism may be represented by the 613 mitzvos, and that's sort of what I wanted to focus on. Now, I don't mean to minimize the importance of robes and chazakas. There are so many times that we're uncertain about how to conduct ourselves, and it's absolutely critical to know how to apply those rules, but at the same time, in terms of appreciating what Judaism is meant to do for a person, so the Taryag may have that. That being said, there are some nafkaminas that have been suggested for the list of 613 mitzvos. I have Reb Zelig Epstein says perhaps that there's a mitzvah of Yediyas called HaTorah Kula. That's the famous stira between the Gemara in Brachos and the Gemara in Menachos about whether a person is allowed to go work or not. And so a number of Achronim say that once a person has learned Kala Torah Kula, whatever that is, he's allowed to work, but up until then he's not allowed to work. I think there's an opposite resolution to that stira as well, that they say if a person has the potential of mastering Kala Torah Kula, so then he should, and if he doesn't, so then there's different answers. The Shari Talmud Torah, which is a controversial sefer, brings down 10 different answers to that stira, but there definitely is a concept of mastering Kala Torah Kula. Chabad Hasidim have a minhag of going through, in addition to all of Torah Shebichsav every year, the Rambam's Yad HaChazaka to master all of Torah Shebal Peh. And so it could be that the geder of Kala Torah Kula is neither going through all of Torah Shebichsav nor going through all of the Yad HaChazaka, although the Yad HaChazaka is structured as a commentary on the 613 mitos. That's why That's why the Sefer HaMitzvos is the introduction to Yad HaChazaka. And so it could be that this is just very consistent with the opinion of Chabad, that a person needs to have mastered all 613 mitzvos in order to finish Kol HaTorah Kula. And hence, there's a nafkamina in terms of curriculum. Nafkamina number two, it is possible that mitzvos that are on the list, being more central, take precedence. There's a question of triage over mitzvos that are off the list. And so, let's say, Kavod Aviv and Kavod Achiv HaGadol. So, Kavod Achiv HaGadol is off the list, Kavod Aviv is on the list. There may be other svaros why Kavod Aviv should take precedence, but one svara is that something which is more central, which is on the list, should take precedence over things that are off the list. Rabbi Rechem Fishel Perlow has sort of like a side effect nafkamina. He says that if something's off the list, so then you can at least contemplate the possibility that it's voluntary. In the beginning of Sota, the Gemara has three machlokos between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael about whether particular things are chova or rishos. It says Rabbi Rechem Fishel Perlow, the machlokos amongst the Monei Mitzvos at least leave room for saying that certain things are rishos. I have to check the discussion about Yishuv Eretz Yisrael to see what the Achronim attribute to those Monei Mitzvos who don't count Yishuv Eretz Yisrael on the list of Taryag, whether they say that it's only a Rishos or whether they say that it's a Chova, just that it's doubled up under some other list. So that's a possibility as well, that something which is on the list is definitely mandatory, as all those things that's off the list might still be a Rishos. So many Achronim say that when the Rambam says that these things are derabanan, things derived from the Yigil Amidos are derabanan, what he means is that that it doesn't belong on the list, and the nafkamina is one of these three nafkaminas, or perhaps there's no nafkamina. Number D is a possibility that if something is midiraisa, so based in cannot change it, as opposed to something which is midirabanan, it can be changed. Based in that's gadol b'chachma or b'minyan, is able to change rabbinic legislation, something which is takana or gzira, and if it's derived from a drasha, the Rambam says, it can even be changed by a god based in which is not gadol b'chachma or b'minyan. And so there you have a double nafkamina, that apparently if it's from the Yud Gimel Midos, then even a smaller based in is allowed to reverse it. If it's derabanan, but b'toras legislature and not b'toras judiciary, so then it can be changed only by a larger beis din. If it's on the Taryag Mitzvos, it can't be changed whatsoever. So that could be an nafkamina as well. Maybe the Rambam means, again, when he says Harehu Dirabanon, that drashos can be overturned by later batei din, and in that sense, they're Dirabanons. Dirabaisa means something that cannot be overturned by any beis din. I think that requires me to skip to I, which is that it could be that derabanan means something which is not explicitly communicated by Torah Shebichsav, as opposed to deoraisa means something which is explicitly communicated by Torah Shebichsav. That may or may not be the same as Pshuto Shel Mikra. For the Rambam, it seems clear that probably is the same as Pshuto Shel Mikra. For other Rishonim, explicit versus implicit may not be the threshold between Pshat and non-Pshat, or between Pshat and Medrash. For the Rambam, it very probably is, but it could be that when the Rambam says that the Drashos, the Medrash, is Derabanan, what he means is simply that it's not Pshuto Shel Mikra, it's not explicitly communicated by Tarsha Bichsav. Now, is there an Afgamina from that? Is there no nafkamina? So it could be, again, that there's no nafkamina, and it could be that there is an nafkamina. There's a famous Taz, which I think someone wrote a whole sefer called Hataz Hayadua, where the Taz says that you're not allowed to make a gzeira derabanan which goes against Pshuto Shel Mikra. If it goes against something which is implicit, so then you're allowed to make a gzeira derabanan against it. But if it's against Pshuto Shel Mikra, so then the gzeira derabanan is not allowed to reverse it. And so it's possible that that's a nafkamina, although again, the Rambam doesn't need a nafkamina necessarily. He's just coming to enrich our understanding of the basic principles of Judaism.
It's also possibly reflected in why the Rambam chooses I didn't say legislative or in the terms I always do, or bond number, there was different technical terms, different kinds of like different, so from here, call me over there, like does that reflect this understanding? Because generally colloquially we just say Durban, and we use it very differently than that, we're just going here. So that's perhaps, you know, reflected in Ramu's technical description.
Right, the Reso for me indicated Durban, which is closer to the Araisa. In this case, the Rambam has multiple descriptions in his formulation over here. I mean, we already saw he calls it Hinehu Derabanan, but he also just says Ein Ra'ui Limnos, which implies a much weaker form of Derabanan, much more closeness to the Araisa. And so, I think again, I'm hoping that we'll have a chance to read it more slowly, maybe next week. But at least for now, to go through the basic outline, and maybe next week we'll work out some of the textual issues. So it definitely is possible that when the Rambam says it's Derabanan, all that he means is that it's something which is explicit in Tarsha B'Chsav. Why would he call it Derabanan? Because we need Rabbanan then to explicate and to really discover, you know, what the meaning is, because if not for them, then we probably would have missed it on our own. If we caught it on our own, then we're the Derabanan, and so it can still be described as Derabanan.
It's also possible, consistent with the Rambam's interpretation of the source of Durban being most assuming or even small, that like that the whole machlokes between the Rambam and Ramban, the Rambam is that the source between for all Durbanans is in fact that, and then the Ramban text that dwells that then they're all really derisas. So if according to this definition, in terms of a lot of the Durbanans as we're using it, really is just it's something which its source is in the authority is in fact in the Torah, just that it's something that they're not going to make a difference, like describing that things can be changed around, so that would be consistent with that.
But the Rambam feels comfortable calling it the Rabbanon because he anyhow holds that the Rabbanons are the Araisas.
Right.
So if you held that the Rabbanans were further away from the Araisas, you may be more cautious about doing that. But if you hold that the Rabbanans are practically the Araisas anyhow, so then you don't need to exercise the same amount of caution. I think it's a nice connection. So what are some of the other indications? Again, all of these emerge, I think, from not even a close reading, from even a superficial reading of the Rambam and the Ramban's interpretations and questions on the Rambam. It's possible that Derabanan simply means it originated after the times of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu himself was a rabbi, but there may be special status to Moshe Rabbeinu. Takanos and Gzeros of Moshe Rabbeinu, you find the Achronim talk that those may have a special status. Shulchan Aruch says, a person says, you're allowed to say if you were as great as Yeshua, I would still argue with you. You can't say if you were as great as Moshe, I would still argue with you. Tzadok talks about the special status of Moshe Rabbeinu. So it could be that Moshe Rabbeinu is much closer to the Araisa, and you can't call his takanos and gzeros, certainly his interpretations of Tarsha B'Chsav, you can't call that the Rabbanan, even though he may have been the first rabbi, Rabban Shel Yisrael. From a more technical standpoint, we can say that since the source of Taryag Mitzvos, number 613, is Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe Morasha Kilas Yaakov, and Torah is Begematria 611, and then God told us too, so that may indicate that anything which Moshe was mitzave us is bichlal the Taryag. It's only things that Moshe was not mitzave us that can be described as derabanan in the sense of not being part of the Taryag. Again, that emerges from a comment of the Ramban, which we'll hopefully see next week. And I think along the same lines, you can say something that was in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, because of Moshe's stature, probably he ratified any interpretation that was originated in his time, or even if not that, just the fact that it was Moshe, Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe, Tkufas Moshe Rabbeinu, Dor Moshe Rabbeinu. So you find that there are some formulations as well that seem to indicate that Doro Shel Moshe has a unique status, again presumably because he was, he ratified everything that took place in his generation, and again, based on those two svaros, both the unique status of Moshe Rabbeinu in terms of being a transmitter of the Torah who heard directly from God, and in terms of the pasuk Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe, may indicate that even things that were originated in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu are described as D'oraisa could be counted on the list of Tayag, and things that are originated afterwards are D'rabbanan.
The distinction is clear, and there are a number of sources that point it out, but it just also strikes us a little bit odd, because the whole point of the differentiation between Moshe versus, immediately after, it's like the Rambam, describes like Atal Karim Ira, it's, fundamentally different. It couldn't, not even necessarily Nebuah per se, but that's about that he acted as the transmitter of Torah. In terms of Takana, something does like independently, it's not, let's say, coming directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why should that be different? It's granted that he's the one, the same one who's acting as both, but it's like, sometimes, for instance, it's a just dark mushroom, like the Shulchan Aruch, sometimes it acts like a Rishon, sometimes it acts like an Achron, it's at that transition stage. But over here, the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu happens to be the one who acted as the conduit through which the Torah is transferred to us, but when he's not acting as that, how does that, translate from those two roles?
The way that I seem to recall hearing it, I think I may have heard this from Reb Zalig one time, although obviously he doesn't talk in quite this language, but this is how I understood what he said, that because Moshe Rabbeinu's mind was so in tune with the spirit of the Torah, there's absolutely no doubt. Not just that there's absolutely no doubt, but like Moshe Rabbeinu, presumably being the first one, was the one who brought into existence, who brought from potential into actuality those dinim which are closest and most suitable to have come first.
It's also consistent with the Rambam's idea of nevuah. It's like, in fact, if you do it, it requires your mind that a certain level of mind, so that the fact that he's able to reach that level that shows an alignment inherently.
So there you have the historical point that you could say Moshe Rabbeinu, Doro Shel Moshe. You have here also the question of before the Chasimas Torah Shabichsav, that Nissim Gom has that sort of idea that if it's somewhere in Torah Shabichsav, not necessarily in Chamisha Chomshei Torah, but perhaps even in Nevi'im and Ksuvim, or even if it was during the Tekufa when Nevi'im and Ksuvim were still pre-canonization, that may give it the status of the Araisa. Again, for the Nafgamina, it's very hard to say what the Nafgamina is, but at least in terms of taxonomy or categorization, that's a significant Shita, Nissim Gon and Erevin. And then, aside from the historical explanation, there's also the question of how explicit is it? Is it explicit by God at Sinai, which would include Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaalpeh, Halacha L'Moshe MiSinai, as well as Psukim? Is it explicit in Torah Shebichsav? Is it either explicit or implicit in Torah Shebichsav? And that's basically the range of interpretations or inferences, which can turn into interpretations of what the Rambam means when he calls it Derabanan. The Ramban, in his critique of the Rambam, asks, well, Derabanan has a very formal meaning with very formal nafgaminas all over Shas, and yet if you take things that are learned out from Drashos, you'll discover that most of those formal nafgaminas do not apply to things that are derived from Drashos, in other words, that they're treated as D'oraisas from the vantage point of those nafgaminas. I think there may be one or two nafgaminas where we may still yet treat them as not full D'oraisas. I don't know whether the two of you have to go at 6. I know that this is only supposed to go until 6. So if you want, we can finish the page, and if you want, we can pick up next week. Let's go onwards. The Ramban in the first Shorash of Sefer Mitzvos, where the Rambam tells us that the Rabbanans don't deserve to be counted, and goes on about the Rabbanans. So the Ramban points out that, again, this is relating to what you said earlier, that the Rabbanans can't be the Oraisa, because there are many nafgaminas between the Rabbanans and the Oraisas. And then he goes on and tells us what some of those nafgaminas are. He gives a long list. Onshim, the Raisas can get Malkus, the Rabbanans only get Makas Marda, the Raisas can get Mises Beistin, the Rabbanans don't get Mises Beistin in the same sense. Safik, the Rabbanan Lekula, that doesn't need to be explained. Tochacha, there's a Gemara that says that if you see your Rebbe being over on a Diraisa, you should jump up and say, Rebbe, how can you do that? Isn't it a Diraisa? Rebbe, didn't the Rebbe teach us that this is Aser Mediraisa? Don't let him do it, because he may be Nichshel on a Diraisa. But if you see the Rebbe doing a Dirabanan, so then wait till he finishes doing it. There's a lot of ways that you can explain that. Is it a question of humility? Is it a question of Shkaga B'Dirabanan? It could be either of those. It could be something else as well. But one way or another, it's clear another nafkamina between Diraisa and Dirabanan. If you see your Rebbe doing something and it's only Dirabanan, so you're not supposed to give him Tochacha until after he's finished the Maisa. That's based on a Gemara in Chulin. Question of triage. If you have a choice between doing a Diraisa first or doing a Dirabanan first, the Diraisa, being more Chashov, presumably should be performed first, and the Dirabanan should only be presumed performed afterwards. If it's a choice, you have to choose either between one mitzvah or another mitzvah. Tsar Bali Chaim Diraisa is Doche, certain Shavusim, which are the Rabbanon. The Ramban talks about Medalgim Hayinu Al Gavi Aronos, that somehow being greeting Malachim was considered a Diraisa of Ayu, and it was Doche, certain types of Tumas Kohanim, which are only Sirim Rabbanon, Kvoda Brios, might be Diraisa and is Doche Lo Sasez Midrabanan. So in all these cases, we see that the Diraisa value, or perhaps read in this context, the value which is more central and essential to Judaism is something which trumps the value which is Dirabanan, read something which is more peripheral, less essential. And so that's another classical nafgamina between the Diraisas and Dirabanans. Questions of evidence, the Ramban quotes that were ma'amin kitanim for many issues where the consequences are only Dirabanan, but if it's Diraisa, we're not going to allow kitanim to say edos, we'll require edos of gedolim. Probabilities, I think I meant by that the Ramban says that we can apply a certain rule of taroves called she'ani omer. If you have one can of heter in front of another can of heter, one can of iser in front of a second can of iser, and then the two cans that are in front spill into the two cans that are in back, and you're not sure whether the Isser one spilled into the Heter one, whether the Isser one spilled into the Isser one. So by Dirabanan, you can assume, Shani Omer, I'll say, the Isser spilled into the Isser, and so the one that you knew began with Heter probably just had extra Heter added to it. That may only work by Dirabanan, Truma Bismanazeh, and things like that, but would not work by Diraisas. Being Motzi, so he was only Chayiv B'davar Midrabanan, can't be Motzi someone who's Chayiv in it, Mediraisa, Birkas Hamazo, and Kriyas HaTorah, and things like that. So that's another nafkamina. Bittul, mitzvos mevatlo zo, the Ramban says, that mitzvos might not be mevatel one another. You can mix up your matzah and your maror. If you were eating in the Beis HaMikdash, and assuming that issues of taste don't make a difference, then neither one will be mevatel the other one. But bizman hazeh, where the maror is the araisa and the matzah is... The Araisa and the Maror is only Midrabanan, so then the Ramban says everyone agrees that the Araisa is Mevatel, the Midrabanan. And so you would not be Yotze the Maror if you eat Korech, you know, the way that we do nowadays, even though perhaps in the Beis HaMikdash you would. So again, it's not quite the example that he gives, but the basic principle can be applied to other instances where it's Mitzvah Lechol as well. And therefore, again, there's a clear nafkamina between a Diraisa and a Dirabanan. Zakin Mamre, according to the Ramban at least, the Zakin Mamre is only Chayiv for Diraisas and not Chayiv for Dirabanans. So these are all of the classical nafkaminas, and it's clear that you can't apply all of the Dirabanan statuses to things that are learned from Drashos. However, I believe that some of them you could at least selectively apply to things that are learned from Drashos, particularly the ones that relate to precedence and choice. And you can say that something that's learned from a drasha is closer to a diraisa, and therefore even though it may not take precedence over something which is explicit, it will take precedence over something which is less explicit than itself. Even though it may not take precedence over something which historically has earlier origins, it will take precedence over something that historically has a later origins. If there's a choice between one thing and another, so knowing exactly that these things, the historical origin, the level of explicit communication, whether it's explicit in Torah Shebichsav or explicit in Torah Shebalpeh, may make a difference in terms of these things as well. In terms of Bittul, you can make the same argument also. Maybe when it comes to Bittul, you have to really ask yourself this question. If something is derabanan, right, but is closer, it was during the tikufa of before the canonization, or if it's explicit in from Har Sinai as halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, but it's classified as derabanan, because if not for the rabbis preserving the tradition, then we wouldn't have it, or something along those lines. So would we say that it's batel in when you're doing it together with the deraisa? Would we say that it is mevatel or that it's not mevatel something which is genuinely derabanan mitam takana? That may still be a question. Being motzi, I think it's also a possible question. So there are a number of the nafkaminas between the Araisas and the Rabbanons, which you really might be able to extend the definition of the Araisa beyond where you would have extended it otherwise, and that might be based on, again, ironically, some of the Achronim who are trying to neutralize and to interpret the Rambam's the Rabbanon in a figurative way. So they give us these definitions of the threshold between the Araisa and the Rabbanon, which may extend the ambit of the Araisas. So maybe next week we'll actually have a chance to read some of this inside, but I think that's more or less the summary of what. If you look inside at the Ramban and the Ram.